Harih Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryan Karavavahai Tejasvi Navati Tamastu Mavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Jai Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai. So, Chaitanya Upanayana, Nyaya Sutras, then Sutra 1110. Page 32. The characteristics, lakshana, of the soul are desire, isha, icha, aversion, dvesha, endeavor, prayatna, pleasure, sukha, suffering, dukkha, and knowledge, jnana. Right, so you see, it's you have desire and aversion. That'll be within, you know, the sat aspect, the endeavor, prayatna, and knowledge, that'll be in the second, and pleasure and suffering will be in the third. You know, so it means these are all natures of the soul. You know, because you have the desire, but along with desire, it's mentioned that for material desire, that when as soon as you have a material desire, the pain that accompanies it is born along with it. Because on the material platform, unless you remove a pain, you don't call it pleasure. So if I want to be happy in a particular material way, that first has to be born as the pain that I have to get rid of to become happy. It's very, very far out. You never think about it like that. Because you don't want to think about it like that. You want to think, no, I can just become happy on its own. But no, you have to get rid of the pain that's associated with, by removing that pain, you become happy in that context.
No pain, no gain.
Yeah, no pain, no gain, you know. Like that. So, yeah. And then you know, so therefore the sukha dukkha, and then the desire and aversion, because aversion is what will be not with what you want. You know, desire is what you want, aversion is what comes along on its own that you don't want. You know, so but you have the desire, but the aversion comes on its own, and the suffering comes on its own. So there's the illusion that, no, I've had desire, I'll get pleasure. No, it doesn't work like that. And then the endeavor is with knowledge. You know, does that make sense? Or if you want to take it into four, then you have your knowledge, you know, sankarshan, and then the desire and aversion, then it's prajumna, then the endeavor as... you know, the Vasudev, and then the, how you say, the Sukha and Dukkha as Aniruddha, you know, or the combination, you know, which means you have that desire and all those things. You have the knowledge with Shankarshan, then you have the desire, aversion, and then your endeavor, and then you're going to have your pleasure and suffering. And then all that put together, that's Vasudev. So in any case, you see, is that all elements of the soul are there, but it doesn't have the there's not the quality of its connection with Krishna is not there. Therefore, even though you have these characteristics, they won't be satisfying. That's going to come down. It's even though you're manifesting the characters of the soul, you can't be satisfied, because you can only be satisfied when these are all in context of Krishna. So desire is to please Krishna, the aversion is anything not connected with Krishna, the endeavor is always to do activities that are pleasing to Krishna, the pleasure is Krishna's happiness, suffering is means when Krishna is not happy, and knowledge is about, you know, one's relationship with Krishna. Then it becomes proper. Then the nature becomes.
Because I'm just thinking how suffering is connected with this. soul, because the soul doesn't suffer technically.
Yeah, so no, it's the separation, you know, from Krishna, or you know, not being able to attain Krishna, you know, like that, and so those. But it's always in context of Krishna. So that's the thing, because you're remembering, just like if we remember Krishna now, let's say you go to the temple or you hear some story, a nice kirtan. So whatever is the reason, one remembers Krishna, one is very, very absorbed, is very ecstatic. Right? And so one will think this is very wonderful. So then one might on the you know, when it comes up in the discussions, you know, the suffering, seeming suffering from separation, then it's why would that happen? Why would Krishna do that and everything like that? But you have to remember is what we call, we're remembering Krishna and being very absorbed, we're ecstatic. That's the position that they're remembering Krishna and they're not with Krishna, because we're remembering, we're not with Krishna. So the position of the happiness gained from separation is what we're gaining and calling it, you know, we're remembering Krishna. So that means it's so wonderful. So then also then you have the, you know, a more special flavor when you're physically with Krishna. Does that make sense?
That's the point. We had over time the discussion that you don't have to see the Lord, you can just meditate.
Right. The Tapaloka.
The Tapaloka.
Yeah, yeah.
But then Gopi Kumara didn't seem to be very impressed by this.
No, because it, even though it's directly the Lord, but there's a different flavor.
Yeah.
Sambhog has a different flavor than Vipalamba. Even though both, you're with the Lord, you're absorbed in the Lord. So technically they're absorbed in the Lord, but because there's no attachment, it doesn't take on the flavor of Sambhog or Vipalamba. So they don't have a problem with Vipalamba. But at the same time, is there's no special for Sambhog.
Yeah, possessiveness.
There's no possessiveness. So therefore it'll be a neutral, you could say a positive neutral state. You know, so it's the platform of bhava. So rati is there. So because rati is there, therefore it's classed as one of the rasas, right? Because in that there'll be the, you know, the udipan and the, you know, the vibhavas, the anubhavas, all those things will be there. So rasa is there. So it's shanta rasa, but and it's love for Krishna on that, it's on, in the category of priti, right? You have eight stages of priti, you know, from rati to mahabhav. So, but it's on the first. Right?
And there is no possessiveness, there is no feeling.
Yeah. No. Yeah, I mean, for them, they're happy with it, they're satisfied. So we're happy that they're happy. But the point is, you know, Lord Caitanya has revealed something more that we can be attracted to. And so the idea is, it's not on the platform of prema. So we say they have the Shanta Rasa, they have love for Krishna. It means love, meaning in the context of priti, not in the platform of prema. Prema is the second level. They only function on the first level. They have rati. So of the eight levels. So only then dasya, then it has that. You know, it might have a touch of the others, you know, some of you see are mixed, you know, so that, but then when it goes into friendship, then it goes up again. And then when it's parental, it goes up with something else. And, like that. So there's a different order.
Prema starts technically from sakya. Prema technically then starts from sakya, rasa.
It seems they can have prema with the dasya, but I don't. It can't go beyond dasya. It can't go beyond prema. Anything beyond prema, that will start with the sakya. So that's why then it will be, in one sense, if you're talking about prema, then it's only four of them.
Yes.
So if you're talking beyond prema, it's only three of them.
Yeah.
So that's why you see sometimes they talk about five rasas, and then they say, well, actually, it's actually four. And then they say, but Braj is three. Mm-hmm. It means the dasya and shanta are also there, but they're in supportive roles. They don't stand on their own. It's not Krishna out with the cows, or Krishna out with the trees, or Krishna just with the servants in the house. You know, hanging out. You know, you don't have a pastime where Krishna's just hanging with the servants in Mother Jashoda's house and, you know, shucking and jiving, and, you know, it's not happening. It's part of the scene. They're there to support. So Dhanishtha is, you know, supporting either the interactions with Mother Jashoda and Krishna, or you know the hidden, you know, underlying pastimes of gopis with Krishna. You know, so she, you know, because that's servants, they know, they go to every part of the house, they know everything. You know, I mean, at least before, it was like an aristocratic society where they had all the servants and that. You want to know something, you go to the servant. But you can't go to the servant. You have to send your guidance servant. Because your servant, like your butler, could go to theirs. They have a connection. Because as butlers, they have, they can talk. But if I, you know, as the guy who owns the house, I go to the butler, he can't say anything because he's the butler of the other person. If it's confidential, he can't say it. It's against the rules. You know? But as servant to servant, they can talk, you know, and you have these connections and all that. So that the guy who's the butler or the servant at the other guy's house, you have a bad relation, you're not going to get anything. Because just despite you, he couldn't, you know, it's like that, he's going to not let you know. So that's the thing, Dhanishtha, she'll know everything, what's going on. But she can take part in all those, but in that service. But it'll have that flavor. So therefore in Vraj, everything has that support of the conjugal flavor, more directly or indirectly. It's all for those, because then Mother Jashoda's and Radha and Krishna can be together. But it has that distance. You know, it has that aspect of separation because they're there, but at the same time they can't interact. But at the same time, it's after eating you go to rest and nobody else is there. Then Radha and Krishna can be together when Krishna goes to rest. You know, like that. Then they go, you know, then Krishna is going to go out. And it's Mother, you know, it's that the whole village comes out, so this whole Braj is seeing Krishna off, but it's specifically Mother Jashoda. You know, because she's trying to convince, you know, why do you have to go? You know, Nanda Baba, he's the Vaishya, that's his job. He has to take the cows out. Why do you have to take the cows out? You know, he has to say, no, but you know, we're assisting, it's our duties as Vaishyas and this stuff. Maybe he has to convince. And then she'll go out. Everybody else will stay in the village, but Mother Jashoda will go out, walk out of a particular distance. You know, probably because they're always around any place there's land, and then you have the forest. So at least, you know, part of that you can go out. You know, so then even that aspect of Vastu, that you have the pasturing grounds around, you know, the farming around the village or the city, then gives rise to this ability that Mother Shona can go out and either on seeing him off or receiving him, or because it's open you can see Krishna coming. All these different things come up, you know, and say, oh, we don't care about Vastu, but Vastu gives rise to so many nice things. You know, so the whole point is how the variety of how Krishna wants to enjoy, then all these things are in all these aparavidyas. But they're only for how much they support the pastimes. Otherwise, they're not important. You know? Is that... You put vanilla?
I'll put that.
Okay. And so then, so all those things happen, and so... These things are nice. So Dhanishtha is, as servant, is still serving the other rasas. You know, they may bring out stuff for the cowherd boys. Mother Jashoda is sending, but they're also bringing for the cowherd boys. You know, the cowherd boys are in the house, so they want something, and so from that rasa, then, you know, so all these things are all there. So it supports. And the cows in the forest, then they're supporting, you know, the pastimes of the cowherd boys, the pastimes of, you know, the gopis, you know, prominently, but also Mother Shoda, that they sometimes come out, you know, in different things. So they're all supportive. So Vrindavan means these three rasas. And of that, it's actually, the three go together, but it's actually about the conjugal. But, you know, conjugal has some meaning if there's marriage, there's parents, there's cowherd boys, there's all these things, because all those things can add to it, expand on it, but also create all the variety that's there.
It's like in Bhagavatam, this verse, Vrihi Kshetra Sutapta Vita, but in Bhagavatam it's the opposite, it creates the material bond between the spiritual, it creates the variety for us.
Yes. That's the thing, is we take it, these things bind you, but in the spiritual realm they free you. That's, they say that, okay, the ordinary person by Nishkam Karma Yoga can bring themselves to the platform of liberation. So if that's there, then why do they make a distinction that because they're jnanis, that they're superior to this Nishkam Karma Yogis? Because they'll recommend it. They'll tell, yeah, the path of bhakti is good. Like when it gets up to there, have, but if it's quicker, it's easier, everybody can do it. Why would they choose the other one? And then because they're sitting there banging their head on the, banging their self on the head with a hammer and nobody else's, they consider themselves superior. You know? You know, it's just really weird. But that's what they do because of false ego. We saw the last thing is that false ego. So that material endeavor in the false ego, because you identify with it. So that's what makes it. I work so hard at this, and so I should get recognized for this. But it's actually, no, you should just work hard to please Krishna, and Krishna's pleasure is the payment. Like Krishna said to the gopis. Means the gopis are the most dear, right? So the results they get will be the best. So Krishna tells them that the only thing that I means the only thing that there is for your selfless service is the results of that service, the satisfaction, the happiness, the absorption. That's all I can offer. I can't offer anything else because what you're doing is beyond anything. So that means the result, the satisfaction of having done it to please Krishna is what you can, is the result. So that means that satisfaction of having pleased Krishna, you know, that complete selflessness is much greater than, you know, becoming Lord Brahma, the Lord of the universe, or Indra, or, you know, whatever else can be. It can't compare.
And the experience of the devotees themselves, it proves this, because they also, they share the same. Once you experience how you please the Lord, then nothing compares to it.
Yes, yes. There's no comparison. So that's what's there. That's what one has to be seen. But it doesn't have the passion ignorance. So if one has the taste of passion ignorance, in the beginning it appears that there's not so much happening. Now and again you become absorbed. Forget that. Forget the immaterial identity. Then you taste the devotional platform. Right? Otherwise, you're on the devotional platform, you're not necessarily getting as much taste from it as you would at those times of a very nice kirtan or very nice darshan, let's say the festival special, or, you know, something that went on that caught your attention, that at that moment you forgot about yourself and just absorbed yourself, and then you get these very nice results. And then other times, because of the false identity, then that's there, you're engaging in Krishna's service, but at the same time, as it does, because of that, you know, it's the mode of ignorance, because what you have to remember is that false ego is generated from ignorance. So as long as that's there, that's going to create a obstacle too, right? The mind's from goodness. And so therefore, doing your duties is goodness. And so therefore, the mind can only be satisfied when we do our duties. But we see the modern endeavor is, no, I don't want to do it. I shouldn't have to do it. And then they think their mind will be satisfied, but that's coming from ignorance. The mind will never be satisfied. And you see, they never are. They can't be. No matter what it is, it's never enough. Whatever is politically correct today, after 6 months, it's not. It's offensive after 6 months. And something more subtle and more finer is now politically correct. And then you adjust to that, and after 6 months again, because their mind is never satisfied, never can be, never will be. Doesn't matter how much they get into it. These things, these politically correct, you can't satisfy. So therefore, it's a waste of time. It's foolish to actually try to satisfy. There's no question they will ever be satisfied, no matter what they get. It doesn't matter, you know. Whatever is the particular position of that, they can never be satisfied. So therefore, why waste your time? You know, but you can satisfy Krishna, you can satisfy the pure devotees, the acharyas, the sincere devotees. So why not make the endeavor to please them? Because that endeavor, it's the other one is constantly changing. So you can never become good at it. Right? So then, but on the Vedic is that these things are established. So you can become good at them. So you know, if I told you, okay, you could take two paths of you know, for your, you know, occupation. One is that a path that every 6 months it changes, so you're never actually going to become that good at it, and you're always going to be in anxiety because just when you feel confident you're getting good at it, it changes. Or another one, it's always the same, it's always stable, and you become gradually, step by step, you know, good at it. Though the first one, you can, you know, the learning curve is much quicker, but everything's lost. The other one, the learning curve is much slower, but it's solid, it's stable, it's eternal. These are your two choices. So
it's like modern medicine and Ayurveda.
Yeah. It'll immediately cure but kill you eventually, or it may be difficult now, but it eventually will do that. Right? So this false platform of giving value to the social, political, economic positions of the non-Vedic is completely a waste of time for anybody, but especially those who, you know, who understand they're the soul. For the soul, there's zero benefit. You can say, oh, we can engage in Krishna service, but it's changing. How do you engage it? How will it be pleasing to Krishna? You know what I'm saying? I mean, if it's something you have to use, you use it, of course. But to take it that it's a policy, that's a platform, it's a solid, you know, it's one of the, what do you call it? You know, you have pratyaksha, you have anuman, you have shabda, and then you have, as the fourth, you know, Gautama uses comparison, but we'll put that into anuman. So therefore, the fourth is political correctness. You know, just because it's politically correct, it is authority, it is evidence. You know, so it won't satisfy the soul. That's the thing. Is there is zero? It means you see those who are most into political correctness. When you met them 40 years ago, they weren't satisfied. 20 years ago, so they weren't satisfied. 10 years ago, 5 years ago, 1 year ago, 6 months ago, today. You can come back after 10, 20 years, they'll still not be satisfied. It doesn't matter. It's impossible. That's Maya's trick. Because the point is, the mind can only be satisfied when it's regulated. That's motive goodness. And then when it's regulated naturally by being absorbed in Krishna spontaneously, then it's happily regulated. That's called ananda. It's regulated, that's called happiness. Or satisfaction, actually, not even happiness, satisfaction. Right? And then, because it connects to Krishna, that's called ananda. But this other where it's controlled by passion and ignorance. Ignorance, because you don't know any science and passion, I think I'm going to get some benefit out of this. By getting rid of tradition and not following, it's completely backwards. How do you say? It's you know, how you say, reversed according to the anatomical category of the gluteus maximus. You know, it won't work. You know. Or it's, you could say it's crazy in the context of guano. Like that, you know, these are all, you know, very descriptive terms that, you know. Or Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur would say, sar or gober. Sar means bull, and gober means dung. So that was the term he used. It's all saragopa. Because when you're doing a ritualistic ceremony, when it says cow dung, it means cows, not bulls. So that means bull dung is not useful for the ceremonies. That means there is one where they chew the karna, shaving the hair, you bring bull dung and put it in a particular place. So when you do that little shave off the head, that hair, you stick it on the cow dung, the bull dung, because it'll stick. You know? And so, but it doesn't have the purifying effect, and so like that. Yes.
excuse me for a stupid question. If you want to clean house by cow dung, you should distinguish it from bull or from cow?
I think at that point, not necessarily. You don't have to. It's just for the rituals. When it says cow dung, it means cows. And then when it says bull dung, it means bulls. But I think for general, you clean the goshala. Its purifying effect is the same. Because I think it's the same bugs are there. But it's the cows that are specific. So that, you mix it together and put the little bit of fine clay in the water and then put that as slurry on the floor and do that. That's there. Or if you're doing, but generally if you're doing for, let's say, an abhishek, you'll use cow dung. You won't use bull. So that you specifically go and catch that, you find the cow, it hasn't been stepped on, nobody's gone skidding around in it and stuff like that. So you get that, that's mixed with water, and then you sift that to take out all the straw and stuff. That water is used in the abhishek. You know, same with the cow urine. So you wouldn't use bull urine or bull dung in the rituals. But for cleaning, I think I've never heard any distinction made. Because everything, goshal is clean, everything goes in one place, they don't make a distinction. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So these are all characteristics of the soul. So therefore, the logical system is to see how to deal with these things properly. You know, but it means you can bring around a little satisfaction by dealing with the logic properly because of the mode of goodness. But it's only when it's in context with Krishna that the soul will actually be satisfied. Right? So, you know, the mode of goodness means the soul will suffer less, but it won't be satisfying actually to the soul. So you can see is then the real use is in contemplating Krishna consciousness. Yeah. Commentary by Vatsyayana Rishi. This is like the third time we're reading this, or fourth time. So we always start with the sutra, and then we read down a little bit, then it ends, so we go back so we know where we are, and then we... Yeah. Okay, the soul, when it comes across an object which previously resulted in pleasure, desires to attain the same. Right? So any situation that's there that gave you pleasure, leaves a samskara in your memory. So when you read that, then you want that again. You know, it's just like, let's say, as a kid, then there was a particular place you went, it had a particular smell, and it was good fun, so whenever you smell that again, then you think of that fun, and oh, wouldn't it be nice to go back, and you know, like that.
It's how some people define anartha. It's memories for sense gratification.
That's anartha. Memories for sense gratification. Okay, yeah, that would work. I mean, that's a acharyas give that, or just somebody analyzed that and understood that that's what it actually, the bottom line is.
I'm not sure.
Okay, but either way, it's a truth, an axiomatic truth. Yeah, because. When it's connected to Krishna, then now it doesn't have that point of sense gratification. But if it's not, then...
On to the point of Shruti Shukha.
Shruti Shukha. Yeah, right. Maybe from that, Shruti Shukha. You heard about everyone's happy. You heard about the ocean liner cruise and how everyone's smiling and happy. But when you get there, you're sick the whole time. You know, and hanging out with all these people you can't get away from because they're all right there. You're on the ship, right? And then you're in the pool on the ship. But then it goes because of the movements of the waves. It's just, yeah. I guess the water's not salty, so that makes it better. So,
friend of mine, he's a captain of one of those.
Oh.
Not the main captain, but assistant captain. Something.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
So every time he comes back after his 6 months, whatever, he doesn't take a taxi or doesn't drive. He just wants to walk. He says, you know,
on land. Okay, so you're saying he's a land lover. Yeah, no. I don't also to get a ridiculous amount of time off. Like if he's out 6 months like that, I don't know, he must at least 3 months, if not more.
No, he should live for
5 months. Yeah, no, something like that. Because I remember some, there was a devotee in Jaipur, Merchant Marine. They go out 3 months, I think they're off 3 months, and on 3 months. So it might be he's off 6 months. Because otherwise they just go nuts. Yeah. You know, I mean, look at those pirates. I mean, they're crazy. You know? No?
He said, higher you go in rank, you get more
off. Okay, because there's more anxiety.
If you're saying that,
more privilege.
You're saying that you feel like a ghost of the world because you're 6 months not involved in anything in your life, so you're just not there. Then come after 6 months, everything moves to heck.
Okay, yeah. Your kids are grown up. You know, he's already said his first words, first steps. You know, all that, you know, and he said mommy instead of daddy.
He's not the right guy to be in that. I have like these boys from Marine Engineering College.
Yes.
Some of all the boys who went in there, they're like complaining, oh, there's so much problem, this, that. And they don't want to sail anymore, like they're like crying. The other Vaishya boys, they're like, no problems at all.
Because of the money, they make really good money. Seriously, because who wants to stay out in the water for 6 months?
Nowadays it's not that much more. It's comparatively, the IT industry grew up, so they gain more even than these guys.
Okay. But still these guys get a good amount of money, but in comparison the others are more.
And the other advantage is they don't have to pay any income tax anyway.
On the ships?
They're not liable to tax any on any.
Well, because they made their money in international waters. Yes. So
there's like 180 days minimum or something. Minimum 180 days something you need to sail so that you'll be considered eligible.
6 months a year.
Yes.
Okay.
If you're 6 months on water, then you need not pay any tax in any country.
That's fine.
For that money you want there, not there.
Not any other. Okay, not the money you made in Monte Carlo on the boards.
Well, they actually used to do that. They would set up casinos inside of the boat and just drive it off international waters.
Yeah.
And it was the same thing. It wasn't illegal out there.
Oh, okay. They do so many things like that.
Okay, yeah. I think it was also like that. I can't remember where it was, but there's one in the Middle East over there. You know that whole Emirates and Dubai and all those places? Not Dubai, means what's it? Bahrain and all. One of the places there, it's a little dinky island. It's not illegal to drink alcohol. Because I think alcohol is not considered legal amongst in Islam.
Yeah.
So they built a highway over the ocean out there. Okay, it probably cost them billions so that they can drive out there and then, you know, and then come back, you know. Wow. You know, go there for the evening and come back. So yeah, you know, yes, that's the whole thing about the water. Take the boat out there.
There's one story about
Pharisees
in
about who?
Sadducees in Paris.
Oh, okay.
And it was forbidden, according to the Mosaic laws, to go anywhere in the day of Saturday.
Yes.
Only some people praying.
Yes.
It was strictly forbidden at that time. And it was only one exception. If you on the water, you can move. In another case, you can't move. And Pharisees, they create one point. If you want to move somewhere, you should put a bag with the water on the horse or
camel,
someone else. Then you can move on him and you're not...
You're on water. So you sit on the water bag on the camel, then you can go wherever you want.
Yes.
All right. In New York, the Jews, so they don't do anything on Saturday, I think it is. Including you can't push the button on the elevator. But if you live on one of the upper floors, what they do on Saturday is that the elevator just goes all day and stops at every floor.
Oh, okay.
So you're just getting on it. you're not pushing any buttons, so it's okay. You have to wait longer because it stops at every floor.
Every floor, okay, yeah. If you lived on the 123rd, that would really be tough.
Yeah, so instead of, you know, walking down the steps, they used to do that. They get in and it takes longer. But
why don't they put one now?
Plus, then they save steps. Because there's also, I think there's a limited amount of steps you can take. It's like 1,030 or something.
1,008?
Why don't they put a lift man?
Yeah.
Who shows the button?
Oh, yeah, why don't they put a lift man?
I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah, you could hire him for Saturday. And then, you know.
he couldn't be Jewish.
Yeah.
Yeah, he couldn't be Jewish. But then the thing is Then he has a part-time job. So that means that, because the others don't have it. Otherwise, then on Friday, he worked for the Muslims and Sunday for the Christians, right. But they don't have those rules, so it would only be that. Yeah, so once a week, then he's... Or the guy, the janitor, he can make some extra cash on that day, you know, so then...
Always
there
are memes and all. So they say, God turned to one guy and said, not drinking wine, but you can marry three wives to other one. No marriage, drink wine.
Yes.
Complete opposite to...
Yeah, and then look at this. So now you can tell who's God's people, because the Jews, they can drink wine and marry. But they can't marry many wives, only one.
Okay.
But actually Moses had two wives.
No,
Abraham had two wives.
One was wife and one was
oh, okay, like a concubine. Okay, so then, yeah, it's just a matter of how much they socially accept. So they get, it was limited.
But his first grandson.
His grandson. Yeah. Because I think it's more, somehow or another, more than. Means you do have it in the Vedic. If you're serious about spiritual life, then you only have one wife. But otherwise, you could have more, but if you're serious about that. But somehow the Christian, they made it only one. You know, for everybody. Serious, not serious.
Some kings had that problem.
Yeah. Well, I heard this. Some king wasn't... They were pagans, and they were thinking, you know... to get into the monotheistic religions, but they weren't sure what. I kind of get the idea he was attracted by the Christianity, but at the same time, as he appreciated that Islam allowed you to have four wives, so he became Islam. I don't remember which king or kingdom it was, but they went that route because of that aspect.
In Russia was an opposite story. When they king wanted to choose which of Abrahamic religion he should join, he asked them what is the restriction. And from Muslims he got that you can be married four times. And he was happy. But when he heard that it's forbidden to bring alcohol, he said it's not possible. Eventually you become...
Impossible. So he picked one of the other two.
And that's why he joined with the Eastern Church.
The Eastern Church. Okay. Okay, so then in that case it was only a consideration. Yeah, well, somebody should have told him about the Vedic system. He could have drank wine and had four wives. You know? Well, the Christians, you could drink wine and only have one wife. You know, like that, and Jews also.
Russian historians consider they fall to Vedic before Christianity.
Oh, but they didn't know about the Vaishnava. If they'd known about the Vaishnava, then he could have, all he had to do was, you know, then he could tell all those guys to hit the road. See? Then we would have had, preaching would have been really good at that site, no? Oh well. Okay. Such a desire to attain the object is the characteristic feature of the soul. Right? Because there's always desire. From desire, then you want to attain something. Because if there's no desire, there's no life. It probably gives the example. A rock doesn't have a desire because it's dead. anything alive has desire, wants to attain something, and it'll always look back to where desires were fulfilled, that it was happy, a good experience. Because recognition, prati sandhana, takes place only in the case of the same object, the soul, perceiving different objects at different times, right? So it'll happen because there's one soul. So that's why it's also bringing up as the characteristic of the soul, is that one has to understand that it's one soul that you're dealing with. You know, there has to be a soul, otherwise dead matter doesn't care. So why would it have these characteristics? You don't see it. If you logically look at dead matter, there's no soul, because they don't have these characteristics. So these characteristics go in the soul. And it has to be a singular, it's not changing. So then, yeah. This recognition is impossible for quote, a mere stream of momentary consciousness, buddhi bheda matra, each state of having a fixed object, as in the case of different bodies, dehantaratvat. Because this mere stream of momentary consciousness, I think that's Buddhists. Mm. You know, and also modern science, it's just, they don't go to this philosophical degree, but they'll look at the thing as that life came from matter, so it's temporary anyway. So it's pointing out as no, it's the soul that has the recognition, not the consciousness. Otherwise, if it's a stream of consciousness, what does it matter when it was there? But there's desire that goes to the soul and it puts all these things together. So from this, it wants to go back to that. Well, if it's a stream of consciousness, why would it have that preference? You know, what's the reason that there's desire? Similarly, because of recognition on the part of the same object, the same subject that perceives various objects at different times, there is aversion for the object that causes suffering. Oh, I see. Here it's all the words have been put in bold, which is the... Okay, we got pleasure, we got suffering here. We got aversion, we got desire, which is icha, and we got endeavor. So we're missing knowledge so far, okay. On coming across the kind of object already known to be the cause of pleasure, one endeavors to attain objects of the same kind, and such endeavor is not possible without the identical subject that perceives various objects and has recognition, right? Because otherwise, why would you do that unless it was you that was there? A stream of consciousness doesn't have... This recognition is impossible for a mere stream of momentary consciousness, each state of it having its fixed object, as in the case of different bodies. Okay. Thus, it is also explained the repulsion, negative motivation for objects that cause suffering. Right? Because this, so it's the same object, means the stream of consciousness, but who's perceiving that consciousness? You say consciousness, that's just the things that are going through the mind, but who's perceiving that? That's the soul. So that's where the Buddhists miss out there. So the only thing necessarily is going to come... No, okay, there it is. I'm going to say we're missing the knowledge. When desiring of knowing an object has the doubt, what is it? After the doubt, one ascertains it is such and such. Now this knowledge, jnana, is the lakshan of the soul, because one knows the subject of this knowledge is the same as the subject which was desirous of knowing and had the doubt. So knowledge, also the intelligence, is the Prabhupada says the closest thing to the soul. So that's the most important. The other things come from that. You change the knowledge, you change what is the desire, what is the endeavor, all that. You change the knowledge. So if the knowledge is about the soul, then you change that all these are connected to the soul. You change it to about Krishna, besides that, it's about the material, and you change it. Yes?
Also in Paramatma Sandarbha, we saw how the soul is knowledge itself, and the knowledge itself and the knower of the knowledge.
Mm.
Like there are many characteristics mentioned by one of the acharya. I forgot. Sri Vaishnava Acharya, then he defines. Start with the.
With the R Raghavendra?
No, not Raghavendra. Jiva Goswami first quotes the verse by him and then he elaborates on each of those points when he explains about Jivatma.
Okay. Yeah, I don't remember. Well, because the thing is there has to be something, like in the memory, you have a samskar, then when you see something, you have a relationship with it. So the point is if it doesn't have an inherent aspect, then what's the point of the acquire? So the thing is, unless the jiva has inherent knowledge, how will it relate to acquired knowledge? There has to be something common. So it can't be that he has no knowledge. He has knowledge.
He has to refer to something.
Yes, you know, he has ananda. He has, you know, the desire for endeavor, or means, you know, he makes endeavor. And so that's inherent in the soul. So then he can relate to that going on outside. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, then he wouldn't be able to relate. It wouldn't have any meaning to it. So, yeah. It is an accepted principle for those who admit a permanent self that there is recollection only of an object perceived by one's own self, not of an object perceived by some other self, or nor of an object previously unperceived. It is an accepted principle even for those that admit a multiplicity of selves, i.e. those who view the self as a stream of consciousness, that one cannot recollect an object perceived by someone else. But those who deny the self, anatma vadis, can explain neither of these principles. Thus it is proved that the self exists. So even a stream of consciousness, you can say it's just a stream, but a stream's a stream. So that means anybody can know it, but you only know that stream that you've been aware of. Because the stream is just the thing that's happening. So they're saying we're not the soul, but then why is it you only know the stream you've connected with? So that means you're different from someone else's. So it's one stream. You know?
Who observes the stream?
Hmm?
Who's the observer?
Yeah, so who's the observer? Yes.
If it's
just
a stream, what is
the,
why
is
it necessary to liberate
from
the suffering? Because it's just a stream?
It's just a stream, yeah, that's also a good point. So it means, why try to get in? It means you say there's suffering from this stream, but it's just a stream, so why you even try to liberate yourself? So, yeah, so they're just, you know, their whole basis is. It always, when you get back to this point, that's where the philosophy falls apart. The farther you get away from this, the better it sounds. You know? What is it? You know, isn't that old jingle? So the farther you get, the better it looks. Wasn't that the... Never heard of it? There was one jingle for... I think some kind of cosmetics or some kind of beauty products. The closer you get, the better they look. Because there's always the thing is from far they look good, but when you get close they don't look so good. But here it's the opposite. The farther away you get, the better it looks. You know, so that point, like the Mayavad, you know, where, you know, there's only Brahman, so where does illusion come from? Where does the jiva come from? The jiva is... When Brahma, the illusion covers Brahman, then you get the jiva. But how can Brahman get covered? Because the jiva, you know, what, you know, gets covered. So each one doesn't. None of the three definitions support each other. So at that point, it just falls apart. But you get away from it, then the green bird and the green tree and, you know, all this stuff. It sounds great. So the closer you are, say with this, like the Buddha said, it's a stream of consciousness, then why you're trying to get out of it? Because if it's just a stream, it's temporary, you don't exist, and because the misery is, it doesn't exist, so why even worry about it? You know, go back to, what do you say? Sitting in your chair and...
When you forget and feel slow and very practice, they should practice it during each life.
Eight lives.
Yes. So so hard practice, and only for liberation of the changeable stream.
They're getting liberation from the changeable stream. What if they just didn't worry about it? Then they're already liberated, and they have to work eight lives. That would be the interesting thing, is put down the ultimate of each one, what you'll get. You know, each philosophy, what you'll get.
And the amount of work you get.
Yeah, that. And the amount of work that it takes to get it. And then if you'll see at the end of the day, no one can beat the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. That would be an interesting chart. Yeah, what do you actually get for what you put in?
Mayavadi's presentation of it is so much more attractive. If you're not intelligent, I mean, so you can become God and you don't have to do anything. So
yeah,
you don't
but
do any work and you attain the ultimate, you're God.
Yeah, but then at the same time as God, okay, what do you do? What do you enjoy? You just enjoy existing. You know, so I mean, you know, that can get old pretty quick.
Yeah, well, like I said, it's not very intelligent. It's very attractive.
We said it's attractive. We did not say it was intelligent.
That's right. If you read the fine print here, sir.
Fine print. This is not. If you're reading the fine print, yeah, then.
Yeah. My Jamatra Muni, he defines the soul as, it is not intentioned, not subjected to change, and not just knowledge alone. It is aware of itself and acts its own individual form. It is consciousness giving, spreads throughout the body, and is made of knowledge and bliss.
Yeah, that's also interesting, consciousness giving, because most of the time we don't talk down to that level. Because I remember the first time we came across, I can't remember where it was, but we came across about the soul's potency. Because before that, you always hear potencies belong to Krishna. And we're a potency, the soul's potency. But we're talking about, as Krishna has unlimited potency, we're 1/10,000th tip of the hair, so like Krishna will have some potency. But it's very minuscule. So it took some time before it caught, because we generally don't. Yeah, because we generally don't talk on that level of the soul and how it has to. Conscious giving means, because it goes in the body becomes conscious. Soul's not there, or the soul's, you know, in Shushupti? Mm-hmm. Then something happens to the body you don't notice.
It's like how the soul has potency, but somehow the mind say that Krishna doesn't have potency.
Yeah, no,
they do have potency.
Yeah. Krishna. No, and then you want to become that. They're just pointing in the wrong direction when you say you are that. You know, in other words, it should be, you know, the as Bhaktisiddhanta says, like Thakur is pointing out to the Sar Ergober, you are that. Yeah. Yes.
Maharaj, one day teacher asked children in the class, if you will be open to change your personality for 1 hour, which you will choose? Different children ask and say, I want to be a dog or cat, anyone will love me and I should not do something. My son said, I want to be God for 1 hour. And teacher asked, but why do you want to be God for 1 hour? He told, because I want to be sure that it's better to be devoted than to be God. It's like my
body. Okay, yeah, no, that's fine. They probably in all 30 years of teaching never heard that.
Or
like, what? Okay.
How about a nice bird or something?
Yeah, but why always the animals and all that? You know, why not something else?
Demigods.
Yeah, demigods.
No, Maharaj. There is a principle, universal principle. Every person who goes to study in schools, colleges, there will be a time when they're just before the exams and when they have to study very hard, and at the time they see a dog, and in the crow the knowledge comes out that, see this dog, it's very peacefully sleeping, no tension in its life. We have all the tension of life.
Yeah, well, they can go. There's plenty of space in the street. They don't have to.
So that's the perception of animal. It doesn't need to give exams.
It doesn't. Stinky. That's why it doesn't like it. Use some place.
Nobody chose to be this fellow.
Yeah. Well, you know, you could choose to be. Because you notice he'd go up and then immediately turn around because it was so stinky. They could also be, you know, be Putin for an hour and then you can push all the red buttons, and by the time, you know, the other guys push their red buttons, you're already gone. You know? So it's like, you know, wasn't me. I didn't do it. You finished that? Okay, proof that the self exists. Okay. Yeah, so there's all these funny things. Because it is, it's just you take Buddhism and you improve on it so it's not as, you know, obviously simple, then that's called the Mayavad. But it's the same thing, but they just give it a different context so it'll be, you can bring someone back into the Vedic fold with that. They'll accept the Vedic literatures, and then from there, then you can reintroduce the Vaishnava and this and that. But to go straight from the Buddhist position into devotees, then they don't have the culture, they don't have the background. You know, so it'll make it harder. So you see, it's just a natural step like that. So that's why then you have, you know, the aspect of Varnashram, is that, you know, you step into the Vedic cultural thing, then it makes it much more easy to appreciate. It's not based on that, it's not dependent upon that, it just makes it, it's easier. It's just like, it's much easier to cook in the kitchen than in the living room. Mm-hmm. You know? And your mother will get a lot less annoyed. Yes?
Why Lord Buddha removed the point about soul from philosophy? Like he explained, it is a
because then there's the aspect of going to the heavenly planets, because if you're soul, then you're going to go on next life, and you want that. I don't know, but that would seem that it would be something to do with the karma. So if there's no soul, then you're trying to get them to focus. Yes,
this philosophy of Buddhism, I don't think so Gautam Buddha, the Lord, has bought it, because according to Buddhism, then there are three kinds of Buddhas: original, you know, Adi Buddha, the Gautam Buddha, what they call. And there is the Buddha, the enlightened one.
Is that the Siddhartha?
Yeah, the Siddhartha, and then the other one is that the king who became later on Buddha.
Oh, he's not the Siddhartha one. No, I always thought he
there
was
are
the
three different ones.
Oh, okay.
And also Buddhism, their whole philosophy, they bought it from Vaisheshika. So Vaisheshika philosophy, they don't accept Shabda Brahman also. Means they don't focus on it. It's,
okay.
They're okay with it, but they focus on Pratyaksha and Anuman only.
Okay.
And then Buddhism just embraces it and throws out the Shabda completely.
Oh, okay.
And modifies it according to their way.
What is the purpose of removing the soul?
So you're saying, what's the purpose of removing the soul from the philosophy? Yeah,
it was
a
Buddhist one of the fathers that did that.
So yeah, you were saying that it didn't come originally from from Buddha. Because, see, the original Buddhism, when Lord Buddha was present, then all they did was wander. They had no place to stay. There were no temples or anything. Then at that middle time of the day, which is a normal time to, you know, when people before lunch, they go out begging. And then they would just meditate or discuss. That's it. They would just wander. That was it. There was nothing else. There was no further development like that. So it seems that some of these other things come later, because then at one point then the tantric aspect got introduced and all these other things. So then you have, you know, the time, the Kala. I mean, Kala, then Devi, and then Shiva. And all these things come in, and then it starts getting... and then you turn into all these different, you know, yanas, you know, Mahayan, Hinayan, Theravada, you know, like that, and then, you know, it just develops. It's just like you have Abraham, and then you end up with a guy in Salt Lake City in America who has 26 wives and he's Christian. You know, well, no, the Christians acknowledge that. It was one of the Utah to become a state. They had to officially say they wouldn't have more than one wife. Though it's a Mormon state, so I think it's if they and then there's two schools: one that only has one wife, and those who have many. But of that you're only married to one, and the others are there. So it's a whole. So where did that come along? And that was a revelation why you should have 26 wives. So that's, you know, same thing will happen in Buddhism.
I just wanted to ask, because you usually say that what Buddha came for stopping the animal sacrifice, right, and he wanted to use the atheistic philosophy, but so doesn't disturb this atheistic philosophy?
Not necessarily, but if they're so determined to enjoy themselves and that, and they're so attached to the Vedic rituals because they can go to the heavens and this and that, so then by saying there's no soul, then that completely stops any interest in that direction. And then, therefore, you just have to become peaceful and, you know, enjoy the, what do you call it, 24 frames a second stream of consciousness. You know? No? They still work at 24?
I think they still use 24.
Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Ciao, Shri Prabhupada ki. Yeah.